Star Trek 57, M23, take two.
Star Trek Podcast.
Arachnia, death as you know it has no hold on me. My defeat is but a temporary setback. I shall return to seek my revenge.
He doesn't give up, does he?
They never do.
Our love was not meant to be, my queen. But be warned, you have not seen the last of Chaotica.
That's the whole idea behind decentralized finance, this new the cryptocurrency. Now they're talking about decentralized finance.
Lord.
Before it was decentralized, it was decentralized currency, but then there's like DeFi, decentralized finance, which involves weird investment shit that's all confusing.
You're making my head hurt.
Call me when they got decentralized reality.
Yeah, really.
Because I'm kind of into that.
Well, it's an interesting though, because it's the idea where you can invest.
I think we already have that.
If you invest in something, you need like a middle person, like the bank or whatever, to hold your money in escrow or to do. But with decentralized finance, you don't need that. The blockchain ledger is that third party. So. Right. So you can get like millions of people in on some stupid little thing because you don't have to pay overhead of a. Anyways, it's interesting, but it's very confusing.
All right, so that was the cryptocurrency minute.
It's got finance.
Now we're gonna move on to the It's Got Star Trek podcast.
The part that you'll actually hear.
This is the part that's been advertised. We are this week discussing the Bride of Chaotica with an exclamation point.
Star Trek Voyager.
It is one of only two. As far as I know, as far as I can identify, one of only two Star Trek episodes that has an exclamation point in the title.
Bride of Chaotica!
Do you know what episode is?
Mark. Trouble with Tribbles!
No.
Inner Light!
No, but it is... Why are you screaming?
It's got an exclamation point.
That's not what that means. That is not how an exclamation... You exclaim things all the time on this podcast... Without resorting to the violent volume.
Inner Light.
No, don't do that.
I don't know how else to exclaim.
You've forgotten.
It's all about nuance.
It's like when you ask someone to what hand they brush their teeth with, you know.
In my left hand. I'm left-handed.
Well, some people, the point is, it's like when Bob got the yips on Bob's Burgers and he forgot how to flip a burger because Teddy was asking him how to flip the burger and he was thinking about it and messed him up.
This does happen. I understand. So, okay.
So now I'm thinking of exclaiming and I...
Yeah, the matter at hand is that there is this episode, Bride of Chaotica.
Not the photons at hand.
And in TOS, you have Operation Annihilate.
Oh.
That's the only other one that I know of.
How many have question marks?
I don't know if any have question marks. Do they? Is there in truth no beauty? Is there in truth no beauty?
Q who?
Is there in truth no beauty?
Yeah.
There's got to be some other ones with question
marks.
That's
the one with the Medusan, right?
I think so.
We talked about Medusans last time.
We did. Yeah. Now you haven't got me thinking about question marks.
I know, right?
Do androids dream of electric sheep?
No, that's is not Star Trek.
That's not an episode of Star
I know, that's,
Trek.
That was
Philip
what Blade...
K. Dick
isn't
novel.
That, isn't that
you
what
tricked
what,
us.
That was made into
Blade
a movie
Runner.
Called Blade Runner by Ridley Scott. So, Star Trek, Bride of Chaotica. One of two episodes with an exclamation point.
Wait, if you exclaim... No, I guess the accent's different. I was thinking of accents.
You'll figure it out along the way.
Okay. Moving on.
If you know of any other Star Trek episode titles that have an exclamation point, or if you have any other reason to contact us with a question, comment, or concern, you can write us a feedback at itsgotstartrek.com. Isn't that right, Dan?
That's totally true. And if you find one with question marks or semicolons or something, any kind of punctuation other than apostrophes we all know don't count, but any other kind.
It's not that they don't count, it's just they're common.
Yeah, well.
I mean, I don't know how common. That could be a false assumption on our part.
If you're common, you don't count.
Write us in about apostrophes, too. You can also get us on Twitter, @ItsGotStarTrek, Instagram, @ItsGotStarTrek, Facebook, And
Apple Podcast.
Why don't you join the rest of your friends that are headed over to YouTube for some reason and subscribing to us on YouTube? Because
yeah, YouTube is exploding.
We didn't pay so much attention to YouTube, but now there's like a lot of people subscribing. So we're like, all right.
One of these days, we got to do them video recording things.
We'll do a video recording at some
point. We need a producer at that point.
I was thinking we could do a cooking show, like as a bonus.
Cooking some gawk?
It's got cooking. No, yeah. We just cook regular stuff. Well,
cooking gawk with Jesse?
People would be into it because they like the podcast. And
yeah,
you know.
Totally. Cooking show. And yeah, we do live cooking show, and we can all each make our thing, and
yeah
we could brew up some ractaginos,
talk about it, sit, hang out, you know,
we could talk
shit,
stew up some hasparat.
So, yeah, whatever that
we
is.
We still got to do our pickle cast.
I'm into that. Making that hasparat.
In the meantime, while the audience waits,
or in the case of Constance Goodhart in the scream time.
Yeah, Constance Goodhart. Okay. Man. Yes.
Yeah, what was up with
that? Let's talk about this episode. I'll put it out there right at the beginning. I do really love this episode. It's a wonderful. It's so silly, but it's for me, it's fun. Some people really like this episode. Some people don't like it at all.
I think it's better than some of the episodes that are supposed to be silly and take place on a holodeck, like the Fistful of Data's. It's better than
that. This is way
it's
better.
It's better than it wasn't a holodeck one, but they did that goofy thing with like some Robin Hood shit.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, with
Q. I am not a merry man.
Like that's the only good part of it.
Yeah, exactly.
Worf says that.
And when Geordi's all strumming away looking all
I enjoy that episode.
Yeah,
but it's.
But you enjoy it because it's goofy.
Yeah, it's not. It's not as good as this one.
Yeah, because it doesn't have all the pieces. Much better, premise.
I think they have all the pieces here. One of the pieces being, it's got a Star Trek story to tell about communication. People from different perspectives communicating. So that's the whole Star Trek thing going. And they leverage the conceit of the holodeck to let the actors and the writers and the crew and the director and the music composer, everybody gets to be as silly and ridiculous as they want. But the key thing is in order to pull it off, they have to take the silliness seriously. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
They have to get into it.
Right.
Which is awesome.
I was so I haven't really watched much of those old serials, the sci-fi serials and stuff, but
Flash Gordon.
Yeah, I imagine, even though this is, you know, satire on that, I imagine there's a lot of commonality between what they sort of showed and what actually existed as serials and what you can still see. It made me think that sci-fi has grown up a lot over the years, because I was thinking about what I was saying last week about Prodigy, and I think I was a little, although I did say, you know, the jury's still out, so I wasn't sure where it was going to go, which I still, you know, still whatever. And then I was also saying, you know, there were some good parts involved, but I was a little harsh on some of the writing choices. And when I think about it now, you look at something like Prodigy, and that, as touted as a kid's show, deals with more complex issues than some of those old sci-fi shows.
So here
I am growing up, you know, back, I'm in 2021, I'm thinking, well, I didn't know if I liked the way they delivered that line. And it's
morality was not sufficiently complex.
Yeah, right. And it was just sounded kind of bratty of me. But so because especially watching that, so yeah,
it's like kids in a prison camp.
Yeah, I know. I know. Yeah, no,
and you're criticizing their dialogue.
Yeah, right. I know.
The cork and see is child slave labor.
Yeah, I mean, we won't, I know we're not really going into it, but I'm starting to get into.
I get your point though, and the Flash Gordon stuff or the Flash Gordon inspired stuff with Chaotica. We've seen the ripples from those old serials through Star Wars and Indiana Jones and then the things that were influenced by those. And it might be hard to recognize the comparison when you look at them in the extremes, something like Battlestar Galactica.
There
versus
was that
Flash
weird
Gordon.
Flash Gordon movie though.
Yeah. But if you draw the connecting lines and see the evolution, you can see, okay, the new Battlestar Galactica or the Expanse or something, for as highly polished and professional and intense and all that, you can still see the hints of the flavors that started out back in the day.
Mm-hmm.
But it was a very enjoyable episode all around, and I'm sure we'll have all sorts of things to talk about.
Are you referring to this episode of Voyager?
I'm talking about this episode of Voyager in that.
I didn't know if you meant the Prodigy episode.
No, that's not what this episode is about.
I know, it's not. I was confused, though.
Follow us on Twitter, and we'll talk to you about Prodigy. But not on the podcast, not today. Today we're talking about Bride of Chaotica with an exclamation point.
But I'm coming around on Prodigy.
Yeah.
Bride of Chaotica.
But yeah, I'm just saying everyone's having fun. I think you can tell that everyone involved is having fun when making this episode. And then you read follow-up interviews and stuff, and that seems to bear out. I just can imagine that this was an entertaining time on the set.
Yeah, I would imagine. I would imagine it is a lot of fun. There was a lot of fun words they used. I have a whole list of them. We have so many that I don't think I should list them all.
List some of them, because I agree. Because part of what I loved about the words is, on the one hand, it is harkening back to those old serials, serialized like Flash Gordon and stuff, but it is also a meta joke on Star Trek vocabulary and Star Trek technobabble.
Right.
Because you have scenes where Paris is straight up like, it's a ray gun, not a phaser.
Right.
You're like, wait a second, neither of those are real things.
Right. It's an imagizer, not a view screen.
Right, imagizer.
We call them Earthlings, not Terrans. That was a more subtle one.
And it was also weird because it's like, generally in Star Trek, I know that Earth is also called Terra, but Terrans are a mirror universe term.
Mm-hmm.
I started drifting into my annoying nerd voice.
Is it you're making fun of nerd voice?
No,
or
it was my sincere one. And I called myself out on it to make sure people did not think I was making fun of my own people.
Yeah. And you didn't want people to think you were too seriously a nerd, did you? I would think that you didn't care if people thought you were a nerd, though.
No, I don't care if people are a nerd. I it's the opposite. I don't want people to think I'm
making fun of nerds.
Nerds.
That's just how much of a nerd you are, is that you come off like you're making fun of nerds because no one can believe you're that nerdy. So that he's like, he must be making fun of them.
I think I'm coming out poorly in this analysis.
This episode brought to you by Rowdy Energy Drink, Cherry Limeade. Present to me from Patrick. Thank you, Patrick.
Oh, I saw that at the store and I couldn't make heads or tails of it. And I thought, that reminds me of Dan.
Yeah. Rowdy Energy. There was the name, even the names like Lonzak was the name of the dude. And he was in the Den of Crocodiles, which sounded exciting. You know, of course, there's a whole Chaotica, Proton, Planet X. They're in the Fortress of Doom, which has a drawbridge for some reason. The robot was called Satan's Robot.
Yeah, Satan's Robot.
And it's a rocket ship, specifically a rocket ship.
Yes.
You know, something that, yeah, we would never say that now. Army of Evil sounds kind of fun. Death rays. Now, the difference between a death ray and a destructo beam must be, the impression I was getting is the death ray kills everyone, but the destructo beam just destroys weapons and things.
I come to a similar conclusion based off of the same logic.
Yeah.
The same etymological logic.
And that would also...
Death versus destruct.
Right, right. Well, yeah, the words are in there, but also the idea of what good and evil does. Evil kills people, good has to dismantle evil, so... So the destructo isn't for killing, it's for dismantling evil things, I guess.
I got the fifth dimension.
Yeah, they just assumed everything was the fifth dimension. Lightning shield, which is, you know, I guess some form of, you know, shield, whatever. But
it protects you from lightning.
Yeah, because that's what the death
from
ray...
space.
The death ray looked like lightning, so I wonder if the lightning shield can protect you from the death ray. But in order for the lightning shield to work, you have to keep it electrified. That's important. But there's the ray gun that we talked about. That there's the Dungeon of Pain, which is apparently in the Fortress of Doom somewhere.
It's gotta be.
Yeah. Oh, did you notice Paris was getting cheeky with Janeway, just like he did with the salamander sex episode when he was telling her to uncork the pheromones?
And she looked at him like, what?
Excuse me. That's how she sounds. Sounded like, snarf, snarf.
That's right.
I want to hear this new Dan Janeway impersonation.
Excuse me, Paris.
And Tom Paris kept saying, like, you're the queen.
At first, Janeway thought the cradle of persuasion was the death ray. Was it the death ray? Yeah, the death ray. No, that was the cradle of persuasion. Rookie mistake. But it has a brain probe and a pain modulator.
Okay,
remember those Warner Brother cartoons with that Marvin the Martian, who was always like something
modulator.
Yeah,
there was space drive, which I guess is warp drive. There's rocket packs. And of course, which is kind of funny because it's real, there's Space Force. They mentioned having a Space Force.
I totally didn't think of that.
Yeah.
Is... That's pretty good.
So I don't think we had Space Force, though, I guess, when this episode came out.
Well, you mentioned Chaotica's lair, which was all huge and big and awesome.
Yeah, it was
awesome. And it was just so funny that it had just a bunch of tables with random junk on it, like you were alluding to. It's like, I don't know, there's this thing and all these machines and contraptions. And the other thing that was strange is it had a marble tile floor that looked like the entrance to the CIA. If you go in the CIA, there's a big circular CIA logo, and it's a very similar pattern. So it gave an almost confusing aesthetic between this sci-fi fantasy warlord but this like really nice, nice floor.
Yeah, that room in general was weird. It was all ornate in this way that didn't seem futuristic or didn't fit with the rest of their futuristic crap, you know?
And of course, it's the whole 1930s and 40s thinking ahead to what the future would be.
The future, everyone has grand hallways.
But with their own technology, so they're like, well, we'll just use the nicest floors.
I mean, was Queen Arachnia, she has spider ships, apparently. Do you think her army is spider people? Is she one of those things? And sometimes sci-fi and cartoons do this, where they say somebody something, but they don't look like that thing. Like, apparently, is Queen Arachnia really a spider? She just doesn't look like a spider because that's what they decided? You know what I mean? I don't know. Like,
well, is Chaotica chaos?
Well, I mean, that's just a name for an evil dude who wants chaos to happen. I mean, you think about the term, the noun of chaos, that's more sort of like this esoteric sort of, maybe that's the wrong word, but sort of an abstract concept.
It's not a spider.
It's not a spider. Yeah, right.
I was briefly annoyed. Now, I've seen this episode plenty of times before.
Maybe she can shoot spider webs or something. I don't know.
That would be like Spider-Man.
Yeah, you're right. So they couldn't do that.
But I've seen this episode a bunch, but I never really thought about it till now, in that I'm watching it. I'm mildly aggravated that we're not getting to see any of the space battles with the spider ships versus Chaotica ships. Mm. But then I realized, of course not. It wouldn't make any sense to, because they wouldn't have shown that stuff. Like, the special effects, it was all about the dramatizing the story and getting as much through your imagination as possible, because you know, it can only do so much. So that actually worked to the benefit in a sense.
And it did. It still gets confusing, though, when you have someone named Queen of Arachnia, which is Queen of the Arachnids. She got her spider ships, but she has nothing. She doesn't even have some fangs or something.
The collar on her robe,
the collar on her head,
was spider webby.
She had like a spider, like hair pin brooch kind of thing on her.
Are you just making that up?
No, there was a spider on her head.
I didn't even see the spider brooch.
Come on.
But I did notice the spider collar, spider web collar. I have to watch again now to look for the spider brooch. Maybe that's why. Maybe she had but she has pheromones.
She's got spider pheromones.
That's her whole deal. For some reason, she's a human with spider.
She's got a smell of the spider.
I don't know if that's how it would work anyway with spiders, but I don't know. I don't know enough about spiders.
They're stinky.
Oh, it was gross when Chaotica was sucking on her finger. He's like, your taste is exceeded only by your beauty. That was gross.
Chaotica's a bad dude.
Your taste? It's like, you don't talk about tasting someone. It's gross.
Chaotica is a bad dude.
He's evil, man.
He, at one point, he's like, I'm going to have sex with you against your will, and then I'm going to murder you. That was his statement.
Right. Only, like after you.
He was all like, I'm not going to murder you now. I'm going to rape you and then murder you.
Is that when she gave... Is this what Queen of Arachnia he was talking
yes.
about?
Yes.
This is after she gave that weak-ass chop to that dude and stole his dumb ray gun, which you have to hold all stupid. Do you notice you have to hold stupid?
Of course I noticed that. I'm not... I totally notice it, because it is so ridiculous and so in your face. And what's weird about it is... we know Kate Mulgrew knows how to hold a weapon, even a ridiculous sci-fi weapon. So I wonder if she made an acting choice. I think she must have to hold it in a hilariously ridiculous flat fashion.
If you look at Lonzak, when he eradicated one of those photonic subspace aliens, he was holding it even stupider. He was holding it more towards the bottom. She had her hand choked up a little bit on it. Yeah. But I don't know.
That's the mark of experience right there.
She choked her hand up. Yeah, that's so she did know, actually, because I think there was the gun itself was limiting in how you could hold it.
The funny thing is if we want to overanalyze this,
I think we do.
This is Captain Janeway pretending to be Queen Arachnia.
All right.
But then we have Kate Mulgrew pretending to be an actress in a 1940s serial, right? Because Captain Janeway did not have a reason to not hold the gun with some measure of authority, because she's Captain Janeway, unless she's playing the role specifically of an actress. Because if she's playing the role of Queen Arachnia, Do you get where I'm going with this?
Is it kind of like if you're an American and you're playing the role of a British person who's pretending to be American, something like that?
Yeah.
Why don't you?
I think so.
I don't think I can.
Why don't you give us an example?
I don't think I want to.
I'm not going to force the issue, but because I do think it might cause a mental break.
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like that would be insulting somehow.
Oh, it would. 100%, you'd be insulting both sides of the Atlantic.
Yeah, you're just trying to throw me into the fire there for funny laughs. You're trying to go for funny laughs.
What would if somebody were to throw you into something?
I don't know how British
in England. What would they throw you in?
Oh, all I could think of, in England, they'd throw me in the lorry or something. Right?
Yes. No, they'd toss you in the boot.
Oh, toss me in the boot.
You in the boot.
Canadian, England. What's this Canadian. Boot? A boot. If I was gonna be a British,
are you on a boot?
If I was gonna be a British person imitating an American, it would probably be like Tim Roth in Reservoir Dogs, because yeah. There's some points in there where you can really kind of tell he's not American in that. You know, so.
He's not. Yeah, he's not so good with an American accent.
Yeah, he's a little. So I'd have to watch that for study before I could come back to you. Just give me the chance to do some studying.
Next week.
So she gave that really weak, weird chop. So is this going along? It's like Janeway's pretending to be, or Kate Mulgrew's pretending to be Janeway, pretending to be a 40s.
Well, that's what I'm getting at. Yeah. It's Kate Mulgrew pretending to be Janeway. Now,
I think you're both
right. Is she pretending to be Queen Arachnia,
right,
who's the character, or Queen Arachnia as portrayed by a 1940s actress? Because that's right. The latter is what I think Kate Mulgrew did.
You think she's cutting out the middle person and just going straight, she's heading straight to the 40s actor. She's not being Janeway?
I think she's adding a middle person by adding the 40s actor in there, because she doesn't need to do that in the context, because she's not trying to trick, she's trying to trick the hologram. I guess the argument somebody could make, and if they haven't already written to feedback@discussstartrek.com to make this point, I guess the point they could make is that Janeway, as competent as she is, realizes that she has to convince Chaotica, and that if she didn't act like a 1940s actor in story, then Chaotica might get weirded out.
She definitely had to act like a 1940s character, but the question is Janeway acting like, is Kate Mulgrew acting like?
Is it acting like the actress?
That's what I'm saying.
Or the character? That's the difference.
It's what I'm saying. Is Kate Mulgrew acting like a 40s actor, or is Kate Mulgrew acting like Janeway acting like a 40s actor?
Yeah, we have a new we're starting a new feature here at the podcast called Is This Too Nuanced?
Is this talking in circles or not?
Write us in and let us know.
We know that Janeway has sort of holodeck acting experience because we've seen her. She's got her own programs that she does. Earlier seasons, there's this program she keeps going back to. I forget what it's called, but it's like some kind of romance novel kind of thing. But she's totally getting into it.
She digs Fairhaven as well.
There's that one too, yeah.
So back, you were talking about how Chaotica was threatening, you know, that he was going to have sex with Arachne against her will. Also, he was talking about how she was the love of his life, and he didn't seem too bummed when she betrayed him. He just was like, "Ah, I'll trap you!"
They started out this episode making fun of the writing of these types of things.
He must not have cared about her as much as he said he did.
Well, yeah,
but then
that's the limitations of what we can, because Harry Kim noted with the recap. First of all, I like the idea of a holodeck program that has a recap at the beginning. Yeah. And Harry Kim was saying, like, none of that happened last week. And, you know, it's just like, what are you going to do? That's just, you got to do something.
You know, actually, I don't know if you want to finish your point, but there was something about that exchange about the recap that I was confused about.
All right. You lay it down on us. Lay it down on the digital airwaves.
So, you know,
everyone's going to hear this.
Everyone's going to hear this.
So I'm hoping this is a strong.
I'm all ears.
A strong point.
Well, Kim, you know, when he was like, you know, we didn't burst into flames in the last chapter. Why are these recaps always so inaccurate? To which Paris says, well, they brought people back into theaters. Wrong. Recaps don't bring people back to theaters. If you're watching a recap, you're already at the theater for the episode in question.
Tom Paris, what a dummy.
But Kim went on to say cliffhangers. After that, he said cliffhangers, you know, and then Paris is like, the lost art of hyperbole or whatever. But Kim was right.
Yeah,
cliffhangers. Right. Cliffhangers bring people back to theaters,
but not recaps.
Recaps don't bring people back. It didn't answer the question as to why it was the recap was showing him burning.
And he's the ensign, and the other guy's the lieutenant. Doesn't make any sense.
Paris is still an ensign at this point.
Oh shit!
But
what a dweeb.
But I agree. The issue with Kim, of course, is that as cogent as his point may have been about cliffhangers, it is nevertheless a non sequitur because it does not really have any relation to the recap. Because a cliffhanger is a separate thing.
Yeah.
So totally he's talking thing. About he's, right. he's talking about the thing that does get people into the it's weird right. writing.
Yeah, it's totally the cliffhanger
it
comes
doesn't make any
cliffhanger
fucking sense.
Comes at the end, the recap comes at the beginning, you know. And so yeah, the cliffhanger brings them back.
But I did as bizarrely obtuse as this particular exchange is, it is entertaining. It sets the mood, but it kept making me think of, you know, like previously on Captain Proton. Mm-hmm. You know, you think of the narration that was lacking here.
I like that the ship had a periscope. I like that spaceship.
Yeah.
Periscope.
Oh,
fun.
The production design on this is really good.
Yeah.
And it may be even better than you think because.
Even better than I think, huh? Even better than I think, huh? Why, you? Whoa, you scoundrel. Even better than I think, huh? even better than I think, huh?
Is this I'm not getting you that drink ever again.
Rowdy.
Is this Dan playing the part of a 1940s lunatic?
Or is it just me being
one of those people that would wander the streets?
Or is it just me being eccentric, yeah. hyperbolic.
No, but the production design is especially good because to film in black and white is a little trickier than people may understand because you actually have to design the props and the makeup and everything, and the costumes have to be designed differently in order to show up properly
right.
on black and white. So, for example, people would talk about going to live tapings of I Love Lucy, and they're wearing like the most garish colors. Like, it doesn't look attractive necessarily, mm-hmm. but you want the colors that'll properly contrast in all the props and in the curtains and whatever you got, right?
That's an interesting point.
Now,
because the colors don't appear obviously anywhere near they do in real life because they're
and I read some of the behind the scenes stuff. So they were talking about this process and how it was fun and creative, and they were all excited to do it. And I think a lot of cinematographers and directors they really like to work in black and white if they get an opportunity to, because it's something they don't get to do very often, and it's an extra challenge. However, I do think there are a few points where you can see the compromises from a television show budget, because they clearly didn't modify, clearly to my eyes, I should say, the uniforms. So when they're wearing standard uniforms in the holodeck, you can notice it in just the colors and the contrast. Like, there's something off about it. And the same thing with the comm badges. I don't think they did anything different to the comm badges or painted them or anything, because the coloring, the brightness is all weird and off compared to the robot and the props and, you know, the ship props and the sets and the costumes of Chaotica and what's his name? Lavanko.
It's Lonzak.
Lonzak.
Lavanko. Lavanko is.
I am Lavanko. But yeah, take a look at that. Load up the episode on your streaming device or on your DVD or on your VHS collection set.
What do you think is more likely, the Blu-ray or the VHS?
I don't think they have Blu-rays of Voyager.
Well, I mean.
In fact, I know
that. I just meant spiritually.
You meant DVD, but you said Blu-ray.
No, I said Blu-ray on purpose. Because
the organization who developed the standard for Blu-ray would have a thing or two to say to you.
Why?
Because they really want to make it clear that Blu-ray is different.
I know, and I specifically chose Blu-ray over DVD because it feels like...
But there are no Blu-rays.
There was a DVD revolution, and the Blu-ray was coming out, and by that point, everyone was just like, we don't care about these anymore.
But Voyage is not on Blu-ray.
I know, but that's why I said spiritually. I added that part.
Okay. So it's all good. It's all good. I don't think they're going to come after us. I don't think we're big time enough yet.
I know the difference between Blu-ray and DVD, and the choice was...
No, I know you know the difference.
I made the choice.
I've dealt with these Blu-ray people before, you don't want them... I'm just saying.
Okay.
You just don't want them on your wrong side. You don't want to be on the wrong side of the Blu-ray people.
Gotcha.
The DVD people, I don't give a fuck what they think.
Who cares?
They're not a problem.
DVD people?
The Blu-ray people.
DVD's nuts.
The Blu-ray people are nervous these days, so...
Blu-ray.
They're extra twitchy.
The wrong side of the Blu-ray is the orange ray.
No, it's the label. It's where the label
is. No, it's the... Oh, yeah, you're right.
The inverse of blue is orange.
No, Patrick got my number.
Anyway, the production design is good. That was my main point.
And weren't there some... Am I making this up? Were there black and white episodes of TOS, like, when they first came out?
No, but a lot of people still have black and white TVs.
Oh, that's what it was.
TOS partly was,
I swear
it was
I
so
saw,
brightly
like,
colored partly because
yeah.
it was used to sell color TVs.
Right, right. Okay, that makes sense. Hmm. I don't know why I have this memory of seeing an episode of TOS in black and white. And I think it was with Captain Pike, too. But I don't know.
Maybe you watched something on YouTube?
Maybe you watched it on a black and white
maybe
TV.
It was, you know, because this was way back when we had the two dials, the UHF and the VHF.
Yeah.
So maybe I was just a dummy.
And you could only play video games on Channel 3.
Yeah, Channel 3.
It could have been like just bad reception and it was coming through like black and white, sort of funky.
I think I was reading somewhere, and I don't know if this is true, that the reason it was on Channel 3 for video games is because video games were broadcasting a mini signal and Channel 3 was never used. So in order to broadcast, to be in line with the FCC.
You're putting it in through the coax.
Patrick is making a motion of putting a line through a circle.
You attach the coax cable to the little dongle.
Yeah, and then you use the word dongle.
It looks just like this, right?
Yeah, it looks just like that. He's making a motion going in and out of exactly...
I love jokes. I love these types of jokes on audio podcasts.
Yeah.
It's great. The overall concept... not only is it a holodeck program issue, we've seen those before. This is one of the better examples, of course. But it's also one of those stories which I really enjoy, the types of stories where the characters have to like play out some scenario in order to, whatever, resolve the issue.
Right.
Another good example.
Although it's really weird that they can't turn the holodeck off, because even with fancy computers, there's always a hard turn off switch. There's always a way to turn it. And what they're implying is that Star Trek in the future, they're only soft off switches. You can't do a hard.
Well, there's always something that comes in and messes up your manual overrides. Like, oh, we still can't do that.
Yeah,
like,
and that's
we're stuck in
the plot combulator was the plot combulator. Filters these things and doesn't allow certain things to happen, like turning an off switch or pulling a fuse.
Like with a laptop, you hold the button down for 20 seconds, it goes off. If that doesn't work, you unplug and let the batteries run out, or you just take the battery out.
You think it's related to the fact that Voyager has...
Throw it against the wall.
They have, instead of like all that isolinear shit, they have that like neurogel connections. It could be that, because it could be that in order to hard turn something off, you have to like rip the Voyager's nerves out and Voyager starts screaming.
Rip out your nerves.
Like I think you're right.
If you're like, oh, you gotta turn off the holodeck, and just rip out a bundle of the neurogel stuff, and then the ship just starts going, ah!
You're getting on my nerves, Tom Paris.
All the replicators start crying.
Oh no, they just shoot salty water out.
Tears start just shooting out of the replicators.
Well, this is more evidence to what I was asserting, that these ships aren't modular. They're all built in, and like
they are modular.
If they were
Come
modular,
on.
You could
just
remove
plug it in
the thing.
And plug it out.
Yeah,
everything's modular.
If it was modular, you could just turn off the holodeck by unplugging some shit and taking a machete to some wires.
I 100% agree. It's ridiculous that they can't turn off the holodeck.
Okay.
On the other hand, even though I also know it's just for plot reasons, I like that they could at least beam in and out.
Yeah, right.
Because sometimes it's like, oh, we're trapped on the holodeck. Like, why the fuck are you trapped on the holodeck?
But they didn't have access to any controls. But somehow the ship still the holodeck, the space, the rocket ship had access to controls, and they theorized that some of those controls might have even been controls that the ship itself didn't have.
Yeah.
So somehow the holodeck had controls that the ship didn't have. And somehow they were still being able to be used, but even though the ships weren't. That doesn't make a lot of sense to me. A
couple other episodes that were similar in the idea that the crew has to play out the role, like...
Move Along Home.
Move Along Home. That's one I hadn't thought of. That's definitely... There's a lot of them in Star Trek. Move Along Home is a one for sure. A Piece of the Action. It's not a holodeck thing, but A Piece of the Action is the same kind of thing where they have to pretend to be gangsters,
We've
basically.
Talked about that one, too.
Yeah, I forget which episode. It was a while back, but that's a great episode of the podcast. Mm-hmm. But the one this most reminded me of was Our Man Bashir, which was Deep Space Nine Season 4, 1995. Bride of Chaotica aired in 1999, so... about 4 years before. Our Man Bashir was a holodeck program, and it had a specific context. Instead of Flash Gordon, it was James Bond style. Mm. And in order to save the day, certain members of the crew had to play out their roles. The main difference there being is some other members of the crew were trapped inside of the holograms, and they were also playing out the roles. So it's a different plot, different style. But this reminded me of this. But it did its own thing. It went a different direction. I mentioned before the whole Star Trek-y story about trying to, you know, the miscommunication, the dangers of miscommunication, and the importance of working out a way to communicate with somebody who's from a different perspective.
Yeah, because
that's here with those photonic aliens.
Yeah, because they were dumb, because all they had to do to end this was to leave. That's all they had to do. But their presence, the photonic aliens' presence in the whole situation, was what was causing the issue to begin with.
Apparently, and it wasn't 100% clear, I guess it was their anomalies that were holding the ship there.
Well, the ship was being held by their anomalies, but I'm saying, but
then they called it a subspace sandbar, which, yeah. I really liked that term for some reason. That was just really, it made me happy inside. Subspace sandbar.
Yeah, it was a fun little.
I like analogies that are succinct and alliterative.
So
succinct and alliterative.
So the Voyager couldn't get out because of the subspace sandbar, which is crazy, this idea. So subspace suddenly opens up and is feeding into regular space.
Yeah. And still looks like regular space.
Yeah, and I thought that.
And they're stopped. Relative to what?
Yeah, that's a good point. And I don't know how you're supposed to deal with subspace entering regular space. It seems like you'd be annihilated or something, because we can't. Oh, but you use subspace to warp around to create warp bubbles with.
You use subspace to communicate.
Yeah, we use it to communicate.
The warp bubble is just creating warp bubble, I think.
I think this was according to
junior engineers, write us in at feedback@discussstartrek.com and set us straight.
Junior engineer. This is according to Memory Alpha. It was saying that subspace was used for.
It might be. I don't know. I get confused with the
warp.
It's
used for butts.
You got your slipstreams and you got your quantum slipstreams. According to memory, you got your transwarp conduits.
This is from Voyager, the Omega Directive, as read from Memory Alpha. Subspace was the medium by which faster than light transit was possible. No. Warp travel utilized subspace to create a warp bubble for ships to safely traverse. Without subspace, warp travel would become
possible. Oh, now who's the junior engineer?
Subspace is what makes warp travel possible.
I buy that.
So what?
1.21 gigawatts.
So yeah, they were holding them in place, but all the photonic life forms had to do was leave, because that's what.
Yeah, but they didn't know that.
They didn't know, right?
Because the other important thing about
that was going in line with what you were saying about communication. Yeah. Is all they had to do is leave, and the problem would have been solved for both sides.
Yes,
but they didn't know that because they thought that they were fighting this war that was invented by their very presence.
But what was particularly clever was that they framed these subspace aliens as basically having the same ether. Those as the Federation. They were explorers. They wanted to find other photonic life forms.
Except they looked like gangsters.
Yeah, why did they wear... That didn't make sense because...
They were undercover.
But why... Wait, they're undercover?
Yeah, no, they were clearly undercover, but you're right, it doesn't make sense, because if they were undercover, they would have dressed as spacemen like Dr. Chaotica. Or
they dressed as like regular people from the 30s.
Right, yeah. Exactly, and that's the weird part, is right, that makes sense if they were dressing like regular people
or
from the 30s.
Criminals from the 30s.
But their two options were the future people from Planet X, or
like,
somehow...
Like Zonklar,
Long Zax?
Long Cloak.
Or even the Voyager crew. No, nowhere was there anyone in suits, even though in the time of the 30s, yes, they wore suits. There was no evidence of that in the situation.
Yeah, the doctor got a suit on.
So, yeah, the doctor...
But that was later.
So
it didn't make any sense that they were in suits. It made no sense. There was nothing that made sense about
that.
It made no sense.
It kind of threw you off a little
bit. Someone can figure out a way that it made sense.
I know a way that it makes sense, but you won't like it.
Oh, no.
You're not going to like it.
It made sense because those costumes were hanging in the closet in the costume wardrobe warehouse.
They didn't have enough Flash Gordon costumes.
They're like, all right, hey, boss, we did what you told us to do, and we hired a couple of weird-looking dudes. They look real alien and shit. What do you want us to dress
the
them in?
Dimension.
I don't give a fuck what you dress them in. Dress them in 1930s.
What do people wear from the
40s? Put them in a 1940s fedora. Then they'll really look like aliens.
Don't even worry about it.
But yeah, there was the whole perspective of, you know, they didn't detect the carbon. It's interesting. We always talk about in sci-fi, we always talk about carbon-based life and silicon-based life. We never talk about photonic-based life, you know?
Well, we do, but you're right.
It's not as popular.
What about chemical?
You're right, but implicitly we do, because we talk a lot about the Doctor.
Okay.
And we talk about Moriarty.
Now,
you know, so I know what you're saying. They don't make that differentiation until here. So they do.
Right. They don't put a name on it, because we don't even consider that life. And of course, that was part of the point of the episode, is they didn't consider the carbon based life. And so there was that perspective, which is always fun to have that kind of deal. So the holodeck. Right. So they were saying, Paris was saying to these plasma, photon aliens, plasma photon alien. No, they're just photon. No plasma. That's the
photonic.
Photonic aliens.
Plasma photon aliens.
Not plasma.
plasmatic. They were shooting some kind of whatever. What were those torpedoes they were shooting? They were shooting some. They were shooting
photonic pistols.
They were shooting photonic charges through the rifts. Do you think those were being shot from a photonic cannon?
Okay, let's take a brief break, and we'll be right back with more of Bride of Chaotica.
You know, from
yeah, I know.
Okay, we're back.
So we're back. Oh yeah, sorry. So Paris is telling these aliens, these photo aliens, saying basically like, this isn't real. This is just a simulation, you know. And Janeway even refers to it as fighting shadows. So he's saying that this is not real, but somehow it's real enough that the holodex lasers can kill the photonic creatures. Mm. So to the photonic creatures, it's not a simulation, or is it? Like, that's the question.
No, it's
here.
Not. It's that's how their reality is.
That's how their reality is. But then Paris was trying to explain to them that it's a simulation. But according,
that's all they know.
So in the land, so basically, if we have the power to destroy all life in the subspace, the photonic life in subspace, by sending a bunch of holodecks in there and sending a holodeck army, and we can just destroy all of photonic life, and
that's pretty brilliant. I hadn't thought of that.
We could at least put a dent in photonic life.
They're lucky. Start to wage a war. What can they do to us? They're a bunch of light bulbs.
Can't do nothing.
Yeah.
Not unless they...
light.
You can't turn off the holodeck.
Not unless
for some
you're an
goddamn
albino.
Reason.
Yeah, right. Yeah, they'll like keep the holodeck on, drain all our resources. So, you know... Yeah, so I don't, the whole photonic thing was confusing. And so, but then we think about, okay, well, the holodeck can kill us if we turn off the safety protocols, but the holodeck at its base level, there are no safety protocols for other photonic life, meaning for the holodeck, no matter what, is capable of destroying photonic life. Does that mean that the doctor has been in danger this whole time every time he's used the holodeck because he's photonic?
If he gets shot with a death ray from Chaotica, I guess.
Yeah, but you can always bring him back because he's like a program.
Can you just keep bringing him back like that? Can the doctor die?
Jesse's right. That is an important distinction.
Does he live
other
on,
people
does
are
he
not
live
programs.
On the, does he live...
The characters on the holodeck are programmed, so they keep popping back.
They live on the network.
But the aliens, the photonic aliens...
Yeah, those guys were gone.
So you could take... But you could, like, then on the other side, instead of destroying them, you could introduce them to everlasting life by saying, look, photonic subspace aliens.
You could... Just start by introducing them to your friends.
Well,
if everything works out, then everlasting.
If
life.
They had like a really cool Yu-Gi-Oh card we wanted or something, we could be like, hey, we can give you eternal life. All you have to do is be put on our network, and then so could are we then capable of taking photonic life in subspace and putting them on our network and making programs like the Doctor is the Doctor more or less real than the holodeck?
I'm taking a big risk here because we're talking about some nonsensical Star Trek stuff. however, if we're going to be pedantic about it, again, those aliens are not digital; they are photonic aliens. But they're not holograms. They're not a digital hologram projection
So there are analog photonic creatures and digital photonic creatures.
I would say that it's the same difference between Captain Picard and Commander Data versus Captain Janeway and the Doctor.
Okay.
In other words, Data is a simulated human, but he's a rope, you know, an android. The Doctor is a simulated human, but a hologram. These aliens are not simulated. They are real. So
that seems reasonable. I can't.
Is this too nuanced?
I can't poke.
No, this isn't.
I'm trying to think of ways to poke holes in that, but I can't off the top of my head. So I'm not going to try too hard too. But that seems pretty reasonable.
All right, I'll mark it down in the list.
I think we settled.
There's
that
another one.
Quite nearly.
I love putting down hashtags.
Hashtags.
The old kind of hashtags, not these newfangled nonsense hashtags that look like a pound symbol from your telephone.
Give me a corned beef hash over them hashtags any day.
Corned beef is called that because of the size of the grains of salt, the kernels of salt used to cure the beef.
How do you explain pimento loaf?
They're called corns, and that's why it's called corned beef, because it has been preserved using the method that uses the large diameter salt crystals.
They don't chop up a bunch of old nasty toes to create from like corns off your toes, and then you get mitosis.
I thought it was from peppercorns.
Yeah, pimentos.
It's not from peppercorns, it's from the salt.
That makes sense. I believe you.
That's the type of information that could come in handy one day if you find yourself with a mess load of raw beef and a mess load of wide diameter salt crystals.
Get into an argument in a deli.
Yeah, don't do that. That's worse than getting into an argument with the Blu-ray people.
You know, this 7 and 9 and the Torres, they were being the meanies, and Tuvok was being a little
Torres
skeptical.
Torres is always the meanie.
Yeah, Torres.
Who's that mean girl in engineering?
Yeah, she's always mean. Now Tuvok was being all like snide, but he was being kind of funny. He was being kind of funny about it, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Totally.
He was like, Paris was talking about having a death ray, and Tuvok's like, too bad we don't have one of those. And Chakotay's all busting up in the background. You know, it was.
They should do a spinoff sitcom called Tuvok and Tom.
Tuvok and Tom. Tuvok and Tom. Tuvok
slash
Tom. So, yeah, and so Seven is talking to Kim. She's like, it seems your infantile scenario now poses a security risk. And he's like, it's just fun. And she's like, entertainment, another frivolous human endeavor. Mm. What was Seven? Wasn't she, was she, she was some kind of...
Your
she...
infantile scenario is... now poses a security risk.
Yeah, yeah. Right. So, okay.
Infantile scenario.
First of all, what was Seven before Borg? Was she, what was she? That's an offensive question.
She was a little girl.
She was Annika Hansen, and she was a young girl, I believe around
a Terran?
Eight. She was human.
From Earth?
Human, yes.
From Earth. I don't know. I actually don't know if her parents were originally from Earth or not. They might have been from a colony or a space station.
So she's shitting on humanity when she used to be one.
Yeah, but she's been a Borg quite a long time. Yeah, but she messes with your brain.
Yeah, what?
It messes with your mind.
Fucks with your head.
Yeah, but you'd think she wouldn't go full on Vulcan about the whole thing. I mean, who's less fun, do you think?
Vulcans.
Vulcans are less fun? So you think Tuvok's less fun than Seven?
Jesse was right there with that answer. He was like, I've thought about this.
I bet Seven's less fun than Tuvok.
Well, okay.
I think the Borg,
they'll fuck your day up.
Yeah.
I think like with many people, it is highly dependent on context.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think in some cases, 7 of 9 might be more fun. And in other cases, Tuvok might be more fun. For example, if you want to sing in a barbershop quartet, go with Tuvok.
Yeah, totally.
Right? If you want to try out a new cake, go with Seven.
New cake?
A new cake.
If you want to deal with like a heavy amount of post-traumatic stress, then you go with Seven.
Probably, although Tuvok might work as
well. Yeah, Tuvok might help with that.
I wonder if being Vulcan inherently gives you some kind of form of...
Tuvok, they retconned it so that Tuvok, because, you know, Tim Russ was in Star Trek VI on Captain Sulu's Excelsior.
Excelsior!
When Praxis, the moon, the Klingon moon explodes and there's the shockwave and then it hits the Excelsior.
That was a fucked up day.
Yeah. And all that shit goes. Yeah, it was a fucked up day. So that I'm saying that's some trauma that Tuvok probably had because Tim Russ was there at the time. He wasn't playing Tuvok, of course, but then they officially retconned it. So there's that.
Well, so there's that. They retconned it so Tuvok has some problems with that. So he's, but not as much as being Borg, I think. I think that really much.
Probably not.
Speaking of making cake, that takes the cake, if you know what I'm saying. But it's an obnoxious thing to say about another frivolous. Like, is she going on the line of thought where she's blaming this all on humans' desire for entertainment? Because, you know, the holodeck has uses outside of entertainment.
And so everybody was kind of annoyed by this ridiculous thing that
it's got to be.
Paris
but that's
did.
But got to be annoying, even if it's totally fine that everyone has their own doodads and wee-wahs and holographic programs and stuff. Mm-hmm. It's still got to be aggravating if like your ship is about to die.
Well,
and you're like, come on, really?
But you still got to like place have some perspective and place sort of the proper. I don't want to say.
I'm going to bounce that advice right back at you, boy. And you know what I'm going to say? No. I'm going to say we're early in Seven's character development here.
Okay.
It's season 5. She's still smoothing out those rough edges.
But just like you can't be mad at a hammer because it can be used to bash someone's head in, you shouldn't be mad at a holodeck program.
Just because it can get caught on a subspace sandbar.
Right.
And create an interstellar war, an interdimensional war with the photonic creatures.
You don't stop using the holodeck.
Right, so the holodeck, you should be more annoyed at the lack of safeguards put in place, right? You should be like, oh, this is a problem. This is we need to improve the holodeck. Not get rid of the programs that are fun in the holodeck. We need to improve the holodeck itself, because that's...
Put an off switch on it.
Put an off... That's all they had to do. It's like, maybe we better put an off switch on this instead of having some big political argument about whether, like, entertainment is a good or bad thing. You know what I mean? Like, because it mirrors, of course, so many problems that come up from, you know, whether it's books of those times or movies of those times or video games of our time.
I suspect your reaction is evidence of how much respect you have for Seven, and you're projecting, not projecting is not the right word. What's the term where you're feeling disappointment? You're putting yourself in the place of Tom Paris and feeling the chagrin from from Seven.
Well, I'm definitely I'm empathetic towards Tom Paris's situation, but I don't know if that's the word you're
looking for. I think most of us are.
But it's just saying, be mad at the holodeck, not its use cases.
Yeah, but she learns. She's going to learn that over time. Seven. Yeah. It's still a little early.
But the saving grace of that that whole thing though that lightened it for me up is at the end. You notice Harry thinks it's funny when she says that, and he starts to laugh, and it almost looks like an outtake.
It might almost be,
because he's just like kind of starts busting up a little at the end.
What I really liked was the scene starts with Janeway saying, like, so let me get this straight.
And
that's like a Janeway thing, but this is like one of the most hilarious things, because it's like, okay, blah, 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 blah. Like all the ridiculousness is happening. This is absurd, but they talk through it and they determine that through this hilarious list of constraints that the writers have put on the crew, they've determined that their only course of action is to play the part and get Tom Paris as Captain Proton to his rocket ship.
Yeah, rocket ship.
So they've determined the plan, and there's two things I like about how this scene ends. First of all, Tom Paris has that line where he's like, you know, like, well, somebody's going to have to play Queen Arachnia. All
right.
And then Janeway looks over at Seven, and the camera kind of pans over at Seven a little bit, and then pans, you know, back to Janeway, and she's like, what?
Yeah.
And because clearly Paris is looking at her and indicating, no, you should be Arachnia. Right. Now, here's the two reasons why I like that scene. First of all, just the surface level joke. It's hilarious that Janeway just assumes it would be Seven. Mm-hmm. It's like, oh, you need to play an evil queen who comes from a bug hive world. Seven of Nine, right?
That's offensive.
Mildly racist, Janeway. But it was the 90s. That was funny. And I think that's the surface level joke. The thing that I don't think it's an intentional joke, but still made me amused, is Paris looks at Janeway, and everyone else is looking at Janeway, and Janeway's like, oh no, it's gonna be me. There's no explanation as to why it has to be Janeway.
Yeah.
There's no, right. Nobody suggests a reason why it couldn't be.
That's a good point.
Anybody else. It could be Seven or Torres. By the way, it could be Harry Kim could play Queen Arachnia. The Doctor could play Queen Arachnia. Anyone could play Queen Arachnia because it's a fucking holodeck program. Right. You put on the costume, it doesn't matter.
They're going to send the captain in the front lines on
Tom
this one
made,
again.
Tom made the holodeck character look like Janeway, probably.
Yeah, because he's secret. So twice now, he's wanted to have salamander sex and smell her pheromones now. So
the smell of the spider.
He has a thing for her. Forget Janeway and Chakotay.
I would rather do that. I was never into that. No offense. Now, yeah. Janeway with the Fairhaven fellow, what was his name? Like Michael Sullivan? Mm-hmm. I think it was Michael Sullivan.
Michael Sullivan.
But I thought they were a good pair, those two.
Totally. I think it was when Paris was saying, you know, he's like, oh yeah, I've been studying past generations, how they viewed the future. He's a liar. He's just a nerd for the stuff, and he doesn't want to admit it. It's like when Tuvok was like, when he was fixing the stuff, and Tuvok was like, wow, you know a lot about this soul technology, you know?
And he's all into like old cars and stuff. He's like a 20th century buff or something.
Yeah.
Yeah. So when Tuvok's expressed, like, it's like, I don't know why they bothered having Tuvok express how impressed he is with Tom's knowledge of the stuff. Is it like, is Tuvok secretly making fun of him, or is it Tuvok actually impressed? I don't know. But
that's because Tim Russ is so good at playing a Vulcan that you honestly don't know.
I don't know what he's getting at.
He's not some half human person like Spock where he gives it away. Tuvok, sometimes he says stuff and it can completely be interpreted in either way.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess he's a 20th century buff. So Tom Paris is a nerd for that kind of stuff, basically. He's doing studying for how the past views the future. I mean, sure, why not? But it's really, he's just nerding out on the stuff, and it's just totally awesome, you know?
I think it's an interesting cultural artifact, because we see a couple other examples. One of them I'm thinking is that movie PCU. Where there's he's watching all the Star Trek, he's watching like all the Star Treks as a research project. There was this conceit, and maybe it's a transitionary conceit that was a necessary phase for us to go through, where people were permitted to be into something as long as they had some sort of cover for it.
Oh, right. Kind of academic reason.
Mm, so the academic reason is the easy go-to, but it could be, oh, I work at a movie theater. Right, so, you know, it used to be that if you had any kind of fandom that wasn't sports, you were a nerd. Right. Blah, blah, blah.
Nerd. weird.
And then it started shifting into, oh yeah, it's cool, but you know, it should be, oh yeah, my dad likes this stuff. Right, so, yeah. You know, I just,
so you know, Mr. Miyagi,
we just hang out, you know, with my dad or with the, you know, my brother, my little brother likes to play Mario.
Mario. Play Super Mario.
But this reminded me of that.
It's a mayonnaise.
This reminded me of PCU and a couple other examples where you have people who seem like they're embarrassed to just admit exactly what you stated, which is like, oh, I'm just into this nerd stuff. And what's interesting,
I mean, Seven was already pissed at him about, like, giving him shit about being a child, and so he's like, oh.
But it stands in stark contrast to, on Deep Space Nine, Bashir and O'Brien are always doing their World War II ace.
Yeah, they're super nerd stuff. Yeah,
dressing up as whatever Vikings or Huguenots or whatever they're doing, and they're just like open and free about it.
Yeah, they are free.
So this diverges from that a little bit, but you know, I don't have any further analysis about that, but it's just something that sort of popped out.
So we learned that resistors were replaced by deuteronic circuitry.
Duotronic circuitry.
It's deuotronic.
Duotronic.
I think it's with a D. Duotronic. I think it's D-E-U. D-E-U. Deuteronic.
You think it's D-E-U?
Yeah, it's D-E-U. Deuteronic.
I don't think it is. I think it's duotronic.
I'm almost
positive. Why would it be D-E-U?
I would bet
I'm not going to stand up on this holographic hill and die for the spelling, but I would guess it's duotronic.
I will bet you 5 million schlargons. That is, I will bet you one...
How much of your cryptocurrency where you only get 10 coins? Can I have one of those coins?
You can have one of those 10 undivisible. Okay, so there's 10.
Undivisible is if something cannot be conceived, like devised. If you can't,
what's
the difference? Indivisible means it is cannot be divided.
So undivisible is the same as indivisible.
If something is undivisible, it is something that you could not devise.
Oh, devise. Okay, devise, right.
Indivisible means something you could not divise.
Yeah, so I have the cryptocurrency is going to be... Okay, you're taking the piss. Or isn't that they say? You're taking my piss? No, you're drinking my piss?
He's having a piss.
You're taking the piss.
You're drinking my piss.
Well, you're taking the piss. The British colloquial phrase is not you're drinking my piss. Although they do have a phrase, instead of saying a piece of cake, I've heard British folks say, instead of saying a piece of cake, they'll say it'll be a piece of piss.
Oh, right.
What's a piece of...
Piece of piss?
Like because piss is indivisible.
Yeah, okay. So I'll give you one of my 10 indivisible coins, my cryptocurrency coins, meaning there's only 10 in circulation and you can't divide them. So there's only one person can only own at least a whole token or... So yeah, that's what I'm betting. I'm pretty sure it's deuteronic. But anyways, that the tube one...
I like that we're simply not going to resolve that at this stage.
Yeah, fuck it.
It's better that way. Cliffhanger, right?
Cliffhanger.
Just as Harry Kim said,
just like it.
It brings the listeners back.
So when he was pulling... Tom pulled a tube out of that Satan's robot, right? And if anyone knows anything about tubes, I'm assuming it's the same thing. Like, think of like a tube amp. Those things are hot. Like, if you pull a tube out, aren't those things going to burn your flesh up? Like,
I guess the holographic turned on,
that shit is hot.
Yeah, so
it's like a light bulb.
So that fucking Satan's robot, he took a tube out of Satan's robot, thinking that if it's the same kind of tube that I'm thinking of, that shit would fucking burn your shit.
Yeah, he knows about the technology, but he doesn't actually have, you know, firsthand experience with the technology because he's a future man. So like,
he's a future man, so he doesn't know the subtleties.
Yeah.
But yeah, Torres was being kind of mean too this episode because
every episode.
Yeah, so when Janeway was explaining her, so Janeway, first of all, Janeway's talking about, you know, they're talking about the situation. She's like, every time we engage in the engines, we are increasing the resistance of the nebula's particle field.
Coffee, black.
We may be facing a similar situation. And when halfway she gets through situation, Seven interrupts the shit out of her, and nobody bats an eye. Nobody fucking says anything. But she super interrupts Janeway.
She's still, you know, figuring things out.
Yeah, but you know,
and she's Janeway's favorite. Taurus, and gets away with everything.
But Taurus doesn't put up with that shit. But like, she didn't even make a comment about it. But she said later, when Janeway started explaining her plan, Seven was like, your plan could work. And Taurus is like, now that we have your blessing, You know, that was, why was she being such a jerkhead about that? Now that we
and
have,
you're talking about the plan about the warp coil, like not using the warp engines and stuff.
Yeah,
like
because
that.
She was on the Albatani.
Which, not to get us off track, is very similar advice that she gives to the Prodigy crew in episode 3 of Star Trek Prodigy.
Oh, yeah.
She gives similar advice.
Right. That's a good point. Yeah, I just forgot about that.
And I think she's given other, and it's not the first time. We saw that with the, you know, the Picard clone time after time, or what was it? Time squared. The whole like going into the dangerous thing. Star Trek has done that for a while. Like, don't try to run away from the dangerous thing. Go towards the dangerous thing. Which is interesting from a story perspective. Occasionally true in real life, but
not when it comes to the ocean.
But rare enough in real life that it is not good advice to follow.
No.
So I can imagine. I wonder if I ever thought that. I never got me in trouble so far, but because I watched Star Trek since I was a little kid, and I always wonder if one day I was like, oh yeah, remember that episode of Star Trek? Yeah, I should veer into the cop car.
Yeah, right.
Like, this cop car that's following me, I should just do a Yui and just smash right into it. And just like Picard says, it's going to solve all my problems really quick.
But it's going to take you all episode to figure it out. You're like, wait, that's what I have to do. I have to
drive right into it. I've been running away from my problems this whole time. Later that episode, Torres, you know, is talking to the doctor, summons her. She's like, what's the emergency? He's talking about how he's enlisted. He's like, we made contact with our photonic friends from the fifth dimension and convinced them all to call off their attack. And she goes, congratulations. Why do you need me? You know, like, she's being curt again. So it's like she's pretty consistent throughout Voyager, where she's scornful towards 7 of 9, and she treats the doctor as if he's inconsequential. And that proved even in this episode. She was like, oh, glad we got your blessing, 7. And then when the doctor wanted her help, she's like, why do you need me? You know, like, why is she so mean? It's not necessary. She's a strong character.
So Torres, there are a lot of great Torres episodes.
Yeah, because like I said, being strong doesn't mean you have to be rude to everyone.
Roxanne Dawson's a wonderful actress, and they do some really great stuff with the character. You were so eager with a mouthful of fucking, what was that stuff called? Ray gun?
Waterloo.
This is Waterloo sparkling now. Oh, okay. I'm no longer on the rowdy energy.
Rowdy energy.
He finished it.
Ray gun energy.
I had a mouthful of seltzer.
But I do think from time to time on Voyager, they relegated Torres's character to being the one to be to cause a little bit of friction or whatever. Although in some cases, like in this case, I think it's even unnecessarily. It's like, it's one thing if it's somebody giving an alternative viewpoint, which Worf did a lot on TNG. Mm-hmm. You know, they were always telling Worf that he was wrong, but he would give his opinion. Maybe a little bit ridiculous to have her be so aggressive in this case, but I don't know. It didn't jump out at me as much as it jumped out at you, but now that you're reminding me about it, now I'm sort of thinking about it.
Well, on the nice side, the doctor of all, but unlike Torres and Seven, the doctor actually lives for this kind of shit. So yes. He thought this was all so great.
And it's a small role here, but he has fun. He gets to act. You know, he loves to act, like, again, in Fairhaven and Spirit Folk, when he gets to play as the priest, he loves that.
Oh, right.
And when he gets to be the opera singer and all, you know, all that jazz. But
remember when he said the joke when Kim said, Mr. President, how'd it go? Like, talking to the doctor, and he goes, my performance was unimpeachable. Yeah. Do you think that was a president joke?
Do you know when this episode aired? January 27th, 1999. Do you know when the Bill Clinton impeachment trial was?
Oh, hey.
It was from January 7th to February 9th, 1999.
It was doubly topical.
So this aired during the impeachment, and when they were filming it, they would have known it was coming up.
So it would have been just a simple, fun pun otherwise, but as it stands, it was a topical joke.
It was a topical joke, which makes it a temporal pun.
A temporal joke.
It is a temporally linked joke.
It's not evergreen, although it still has merit.
It's semi-evergreen.
Because it still has merit.
It's still playing a president.
Yeah, and right, so it just has more effect during a certain time period.
Presidents came after that and got impeached. Or,
that makes it even better.
One of them got impeached a couple of times.
Yeah, one president got impeached twice after him, after Bill Clinton, so...
for real reason.
The Robert Picardo, of course, is always brilliant in everything he does.
He's just a joy.
So it's great to. It was great to see even the small role. Even though he was going for sort of a Truman-esque type thing, but he looked more like the Nazi from Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Oh no,
didn't he? Right, I think they were trying to make him. They were trying to have him cut the jib of a. sort of an amalgam of like Harry Truman or maybe.
I don't like the cut of that, Jim.
But yeah, it was much, especially the way they filmed from the lower angle, and he did some weird facial smiles, not weird in a bad way, but in a Robert Picardo playing the doctor way, but they came with the glasses and the little hat. He really was very, very Nazi-ish.
Janeway was full on facial expressions throughout this whole episode. Oh, Janeway,
Kate Mulgrew threw herself into this fucking role.
Yeah.
It was wonderful.
Like when she was looking bored by Lonzak because Lonzak was falling in love with her pheromones and she was like yeah. going back and forth between, you know, acting and then being like, oh God.
Oh, and the guy who played Lonzak is great because, as is of course, the fellow who played Chaotica. I'm trying to remember his name. I had it written down somewhere, but because all these characters were really good. The actors, I alluded to it before, but part of what makes this work is that the actors are so good that they can play this style, this kind of quasi bad acting style very well. It's hard to bad act on purpose.
Yeah.
It takes extra acting chops to act like a bad actor. And not that they're acting like bad actors, but the over the top scenery chewing villains and occupying those roles so well, that especially that Lonzak guy really screams henchman.
Yeah, he does.
And he's all bulky and wearing that ridiculous outfit.
Big
yeah,
goofy hat.
I don't know what's going on with that outfit.
All the actors they hired in this, and I already mentioned, I thought that the main alien, particularly the main photonic alien guy, really had an ethereal alienish look to him, even Earth. In his garb that he
yeah,
had.
Yeah, he made some good faces.
But Chaotic was great, and
that when that robot was yelling damage, yeah. That was funny, but it was also a little sad.
It was a little sad, especially little because he was being treated so poorly at that point. Paris
was not acting very Star Trek future, not very Federation in this episode, because he did an execution shot on Lonzak that didn't actually end up killing him. But it was at the beginning of the episode he shot him, and then when he was down, he shot him in the face.
Yeah,
again when he was down, and he was just beating on that robot the whole time, you know. So
one of my favorite things in the entire episode,
he's a criminal.
One of my favorite things in the entire episode is a real low-key thing, but I just love this so much. The robot is yelling, he yells invaders really loud when the alien guy comes in, right? He's like invaders, and Tom Paris sort of smacks him and says like, you know, shut up or be quiet or whatever, and then the robot says invaders.
Oh, <man. laughs>
sort of all morosely and sad. He's like, but invaders. It's like when your dog barks at the mailman and you yell at your dog not to bark at the mailman. The dog's like, just... but there's a stranger outside the door. He's touching the door. He's outside. What am I supposed to do? The robot had a real dog. It was funny that it was called like, what was it? The Satan's robot or whatever.
Yeah, Satan's robot.
Why is he? It's a nice robot overall.
Yeah, they tried to get at him,
why
but that was just what it was
Satan's
programmed
robot?
To do.
It's Chaotica's robot.
And why would Satan have a robot?
Yeah.
Satan doesn't
what
need a robot.
What does Satan need with a robot?
What's he going to do with a robot? Who are these people?
Who are these people?
Who are these robots?
And then Goodhart died. That was a bummer.
Oh,
why'd she have to die?
We should take a break in a second, but I just wanted to comment that it's funny. The Goodhart thing feels like a play off of the James Bond thing, which we also see. In a more important usage in the Our Man Bashir, but it's sort of a weak sauce version of a James Bond thing. This is no pussy galore. This is Goodhart. And I know James Bond had a few that were along similar lines, but I just thought that was funny. Okay, we'll take a quick break and then we'll be right back with more podcast. Okay, we're back. And now,
welcome back, guys.
Now we can start to wrap things up with odds and ends. And I have a great
into the wormhole.
We'll go into the wormhole. We'll go into our new feature, the wormhole. And I have a new little game we're gonna play in the wormhole.
I think you'll enjoy it.
So first, let's go over any odds and ends, anything we haven't yet discussed about the episode.
Tuvok said sensors, and Chaotica said vibrate.
He always
says sensors. But Paris said sensors, and then Chaotica said vibrate at one point. I'm sorry, it's not really important.
Harry Kim wanted the slave girls, and he was sad that he wasn't getting slave girls.
Yeah, and then what was it? Paris said something about we'll do that in the next episode or something. He's like, after we infiltrate the Fortress of Doom, we'll free Chaotica's harem there.
And then have sex with him?
Yeah, I know. That was fucked up.
There's a little rapiness here.
Yeah, a little.
I know it's holographic,
and,
but
Harry Kim is totally down.
Yeah, he seems like
he's the only other one that he's the only person that, that's not annoyed by this whole Captain Proton.
It's because he really wants scenario. To. He really wants Tom Paris to think he's cool.
Yeah, exactly.
So,
infantile scenario.
So Constance Goodhart screamed 5 times.
5.
The first time was when the narrator said she'll be sacrificed to the Queen of Arachnia. Scream 1. Scream 2 was when they're talking when the Imagizer comes on for the first time and it's Captain Proton and Chaotica says Captain Proton surrender and then she screams. The third time is Chaotica again on the Imagizer going, I'm afraid your secretary has already been promised to Queen Arachnia and a supreme sacrifice. Subspace Alien says they are hostile. This contact should be terminated. And Chaotic goes, indeed, Lonzek, execute them. And then he obliterates them. And even the script is like constant screams, of course. And then this is Chakotea.net, which does the... So even that in the script this guy put together, he's like, yeah, of course she screams. Then the fifth one comes in the same scene. In the same scene, Chaotic says...
Wait. Which scene?
The same scene. Says, take Ms. Goodhart to Arachnia. Invite the queen to join them in battle. Together we will rain destruction on the fifth dimension. Constance screams as a robot approaches her. And then she's dead after that. So
and
she screams
Constance,
5 times.
And you notice that Constance had that mega dark eyeshadow that was popular in the film noirs and possibly the Flash Gordon and other serials. But certainly I've seen that in plenty of film noirs. That really pale facial makeup, but the dark eyeliner stuff.
I was also confused about how the universal translator, how this could come into play at all in this episode. That was confusing because the holodeck speaking the language that they're talking to the Enterprise crew with, but then
the neck bones connected to the leg bone.
But then,
by the way, that's not accurate.
But then when the crew wasn't even there, when it was just Chaotica's people and then the subspace alien people, they're still talking English. Obviously, we're supposed to assume they're speaking through the universal translator, but the translator's not going to know whatever photonic language that is, and they're not going to be wearing a translator to begin with because they're photonic aliens.
We get in trouble online every time we start talking about the translator. Somebody's always correcting us or adding something else, which is good. But
okay, we don't need to. But I'm just so.
I'm not saying not to discuss it. I'm saying that it's going to be very difficult to come to anything that makes any sense. Because the concept of the universal translator is ridiculous to begin with.
Right, and so I think it's worth pointing out when it's particularly ridiculous, which in this episode
ridiculous.
I couldn't in talk my way out of it. Oh, yeah, and you were referring to the Janeway with the coffee. Neelix was... Why was he trying to shut Janeway down when she wanted coffee? He started talking about, like, well, we only have 2 replicators, and it's like... And none of them are being used at the time, so why is he fucking telling her about the replicators?
So this is...
There should be a t-shirt about that scene, because there's always all those silly coffee t-shirts. There should be one about Janeway and Neelix, and Janeway wanting a coffee or something.
So we know Janeway loves coffee.
Yeah.
And we know that Neelix can, as here, on occasion, serve... very well in the capacity of providing a combination of exposition and comedic relief.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So he served that purpose here. He provides exposition in the form of conveying to us the level of severity of the troubles the crew of the Voyager are suffering under.
Mm-hmm.
The levity, the comedic part, comes from the fact that he's talking about there's not enough bathrooms.
Mm-hmm.
He states in no uncertain terms that
the Bolians.
Bolians take big old shits.
Yeah.
That's what Neelix said.
That was so gross. I don't know. I was grossed out by that.
I was grossed out too because Neelix was like, Bolians take big old shits. And there's only 4 bathrooms.
They fuck up our plumbing.
How many Bolians do they have?
Like, we might make it if the Bolians weren't here.
And that's great. No, Jesse, you ask a good question because baseline, we already understand Bolians take big old shits. Baseline, that's what we're meant to understand. However, the degree of big old shitness is relative to how many Bolians there are. Is there 1 Bolian, 2 Bolians?
Mm.
If Neelix is worried about 2 or 3 Bolians fucking up the plumbing,
do they cut hair on Voyager? Is that what it?
I don't know. I bet they do all sorts of stuff.
Because on TNGs, they Bolians cutting hair. Right?
Yeah, but you see, Bolians are up to all sorts of business. Yeah,
they just cut hair.
They cut hair and they got rumor monger.
This was all due to gravimetric forces disrupting the control systems. I mean, if gravimetric forces can really do that to entire, this has to be specific to subspace energy, because I don't know how gravitational forces can ruin all the systems in a ship.
I just love how you're
gravimetric forces.
You're so sincerely like upset and concerned about you just
gravimetric
forces and the ray guns and the death rays and the
we gotta have rules in order for this
energizer.
World. We can have people casting fireballs. It just has to fit in the rules, man.
But the deal with the coffee, I want to get back to that because it is interesting. I like that scene. I liked all the Bullions taking big shits thing. I really like Neelix's line. It's a throwaway line. I don't even know if you noticed it, but that scene starts with Neelix saying, "Look on the bright side. There's only three meals a day."
Yeah.
He's basically saying, "Like, I know my cooking is shit."
Yeah. That was pretty good.
I know you're just going to convert this into a giant fat blue bullion shit.
Oh, but, man.
You only have to do it three times. And that sounds like a threat. Because, I mean, you don't got to eat three times in a day.
It looked like some gross, like, wilted greens.
Oh, yeah. I know. They're so sad.
So all that is great. But where I get confused is where this whole thing with the coffee, because Janeway comes in and she wants coffee and she wants it black. And she seems totally out of sorts.
She does.
Weirdly out of sorts. I don't know if she didn't get enough sleep. But it's weird because she's acting like she just woke up and needs her morning coffee. Mm. However, she hasn't just woken up. They're undergoing this situation. I don't believe she's just woken up. If that's what I'm meant to believe, it wasn't conveyed to me in my three viewings of this episode. Mm. She wants some coffee. So she goes to the mess hall. So we can presume that the other replicators are not working. That's fine. Her personal replicator in her quarters is not working. Other replicators that she could have accessed more quickly, whatever. So she's in the mess hall. She's getting some coffee. So she goes up to Neelix. She asks for coffee, black. Neelix, as you note, Dan, resists and says, "Well, there's only two replicators." Okay. Right. Okay. Mm-hmm. We understand. However, we shortly find that there is no line at the replicators. Mm-hmm. So that's not the issue. We also learn that they are standing approximately 3.5 to 4 meters from the replicators so they can see them. So this is confusing to begin with. And then what's more confusing is he's like, "Okay, fine, I'll get you your coffee." So Neelix walks over to the replicator and Janeway goes with him. And then he replicates the coffee and gives it to her. I'm just confused as to why Janeway didn't just walk in and walk up to the replicator that was clearly empty and order some coffee.
Yeah.
Why is she making Neelix do this little puppet dance?
Yeah, I mean, because it's doubly weird because she's the captain. She can do this. And Neelix, knowing she's the captain, shouldn't have questioned her. Either way, she's the captain. We've established that she can get coffee whenever the fuck she wants. She can tell anyone to get her coffee. Yeah, why didn't she just go up and get it? Who is someone going to come up?
She didn't have her coffee yet, so she wasn't.
So she was confused. That's a fair point.
Okay.
It's like, "Where's coffee?"
The other thing is, and I don't know exactly how to phrase this politely, but when she drank that coffee, she looked like she had a minor orgasm. Mm,
yeah.
I'm not complaining. I'm not attempting to needlessly sexualize or over-sexualize Captain Janeway by any means. It threw me off a little bit. Her enjoyment of that coffee. And then when you think of the meta fact that this is not Captain Janeway drinking a coffee, this is Kate Mulgrew, the brilliant actress, drinking what's probably an empty cup of nothing and acting out this visceral pleasure reaction to drinking this coffee, I identified with it.
She liked it even more than this is another sexual scene where when she got the when Chaotic was like, "Behold the death ray," and she's like, "Oh, it looks like a formidable weapon."
And she rubbed it.
She rubbed it. And like
she rubbed the and then penis
he,
tip
and,
of it.
Yeah, and he goes, "The most powerful in the cosmos." You know, that was highly sexual. She was still much more, I don't blame her. I'd be more excited by coffee than that.
And I was less put off by that because in the context of a 1930s, 40s serial, the over-sexualization of phallic weaponry would not be out of place or unusual.
Fair point.
I almost say they played it as a joke. But that drinking the coffee, I'm not against the shuddering response to drinking the coffee, but it just popped out at me. And reminded me of my youth. But, any other odds and ends?
I just have one or two. their ship was going down, and then they were telling the doctor, Harry Kim and Tom Paris were telling the doctor to activate the destructo beam, and he's like, "The what?" And they're like, "The big button in the middle of that panel." And then the robot's like, distract no beam. And the doctor's going to hit the button, but it's the wrong button apparently, because Kim and Paris say together, the other panel.
Yeah.
Like, what is
that's gonna this,
that
this,
was this, like
that's
self
gonna,
destruct?
That's gonna come up in the wormhole section of the show.
Okay. Well then I guess there's nothing else to say about that.
I thought the music in this episode was great. I just want to make a comment that comment on that often. Star Trek is known for having great composers and often has really good music, but it's really fun when they get the chance to play outside of their normal sandbox, and they were doing all the orchestral fun 1940s type stuff, which was entertaining and it meshed well with the other musical motifs of the show.
When the ship was going slowly to try to get away from the thing, they start off by going 2 meters per second. That's nothing for a ship in space going 2 meters per second. It's like you have to take effort to go that slow. You'll just drift faster than that.
Yeah.
And then sometimes I whistle when I pronounce my SHs. If you listen, when Tuvok goes, I've localized the weapons fire. It's emanating from within the ship. He makes a whistling sound when he says ship. So that you should... You should pay attention. We ain't found a
Tim Russ, Spaceballs.
And last thing is, Janeway really sold shutting down that lightning shield a bit too heavily. That when she kept telling him, was like, well, what about shutting down the lightning shield? You know, she sold that to her. I know they did that on purpose, but you know, I know that was done purposefully. So there's nothing. I'm not complaining. It's just, you know, noting that. Wow, she really should have. She should have played it like she'd been there, you know, and she wasn't. Not that Janeway wasn't.
She should have played it like she'd been there.
Yeah, you know, like when you do something awesome, you're not supposed to be like all crazy about it. It's just
are you referring to that phrase? She wasn't being smooth. Act like you've been there before. Like that's what they tell people when they go to the Super Bowl or the Masters.
What did I say?
No, I'm comparing your statement. I was wondering if you were deriving it from.
Well,
that,
and I'm
like,
wondering,
act like you've been there before.
Yeah, no, that's probably what I was going for, and I can't remember what I said, and I'm wondering if I sounded really stupid just then.
No, you sounded extremely intelligent.
Oh, phew. I was so worried.
All right, my last odd and end was, well, I guess I got two. One was just about the transitions. My mind immediately thinks of the scene transitions as Star Wars transitions, but of course I know that Star Wars actually got those transitions from these types of serials.
So did Indiana Jones.
And Indiana Jones, and that's it. Those are the two things. Nothing else. But the other thing was also with Janeway when she was in her Bride of Chaos mode was there's that one moment where she grabs the microphone cable and she sort of does that little like whip thing. She like whips the microphone cable before she starts talking.
Yeah.
I like that for some reason. that stood out to me. I enjoyed that. And I did enjoy her line where when what was she said? She was like, I don't know how to tell you.
Oh
yeah,
the wedding's off.
Yeah.
which is funny because that's not a. See, like an old style serials thing. That's a right. Arnold Schwarzenegger 1980s movie type line.
Yeah, right.
The wedding's off. Poosh. And then she fucking like just murders it.
That's a good point.
Yeah, but it was fun episode, great episode. Any other final little points, or shall we move along into the move along home to the wormhole?
Let's get to the wormhole.
Now, wormhole.
Okay, so we have this week in the wormhole.
Through the wormhole.
In the wormhole. In the wormhole. We are going to play a game that I'm going to call Tongo or Fizbin.
What?
Tongo or Fizbin, which is my play on Fact or Fiction.
Oh, is this, what language is this?
Well, Tongo is that game the Ferengi were always playing on Deep Space Nine. Fizbin is the made-up game that Kirk plays in A Piece of the Action
trick the right. gangster.
So Tongo or Fizbin. Tongo's real. Fizbin's fake. Now, technically...
Why is Tongo real?
Well, because Tongo is a real game that the Ferengi played. Now,
here's the thing. Wait, Fizbin, how is Fizbin fake then?
Because Fizbin is a fake game in the context of Star Trek.
Oh, okay. I think I get it.
Because Kirk invented Fizbin in order to distract
Kate Mulgrew acting like Janeway acting like...
Well, you can just...
Real in the context
of... brain, you can just think of it as fact or fiction, but okay. I'm just saying, Tongo, you gotta, we're a Star Trek podcast, you gotta do something Star Trek.
Ooh,
Tongo or Fizbin. So basically all it is I've got three brief facts, quote unquote facts. One of them, however, is not a fact. So it is going to be up to you, Jesse, and you, Dan, to determine, you're going to each guess which one is not the fact. You got it?
Right.
One fraudulent. Two are real trivia facts about this here very episode.
You have to wait for
Bride of Chaotica.
You have to wait for both of us to give our answer before you can tell us if we're right or wrong.
I will.
Okay.
I guarantee you
that. I hope that's how it works.
Because that's some shows don't do it like that. Where this second person has a better chance.
And that shit fucking flummoxes me because it's like, what the fuck is your problem?
Yeah.
It's a very simple thing.
Those games are rigged.
Both of you, I assure you, both of you will have ample time to figure out which one is the false one. But yeah, these are trivia items that are about this episode. Two of them are real and one of them is fake. Okay.
Let's do this.
Lay it on us.
So trivia item number one. There was a fire.
Put it on my butt.
Dan,
Sorry.
I'm trying to start Tonga or Fisbee.
I'm sorry. That was fucked up.
All right. It's okay. It's no problem. Trivia item number one. There was a fire that had damaged the set for the Bridge of the Voyager. So the plot of this episode was written to limit time on the bridge as much as possible, since those scenes had to be filmed after the repairs. Got it? Mm-hmm. So there's a fire. So it affected the writing of
Two of these are real.
Two of these are real and one of them is fake.
Okay.
This trivia item saying there was a fire, so that resulted in they wrote this episode in such a way as to not require much time on the bridge. All right. Item number two. The throne used by Chaotica was previously used on Voyager in the season 3 episode Distant Origins, and before that as a quote-unquote alien throne in the Dan Aykroyd Jane Curtin classic Coneheads from 1993. So Chaotica's throne was previously used in Coneheads, as well as a previous episode of Star Trek Voyager.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Trivia fact number three. Tom and Harry yelling at the doctor about the correct panel for pushing the destructive button is an in-joke referencing the fact that while filming the previous episode, Robert Picardo pushed the wrong button on the bridge, which caused an electrical short that resulted in a fire that damaged the set and the electrocution deaths of 5 crew members and a visiting Make-A-Wish child. So Robert Picardo accidentally pushed the wrong button.
And killed a child.
Killed 6 people. And so that that scene in this episode is a joke referencing that.
It's a joke. I'm going to have to call Fizbin on the joke that references killing 6 people.
Don't rush into it. You know, we give you each an opportunity to think. So 1, 2, or 3, which one of those do you think is the fake trivia fact?
I'm going to go with 3 as well.
Yeah. Jesse, you think it's number 3. Dan, you sure?
I don't have to think about this.
I know.
You're sure?
I'm sure that they didn't make a joke about killing a dying child.
So, as it turns out, good job this week, guys.
It means that my sense of humor has not gone off the rails. That'd be a good joke. I'd do that.
I already knew about the first one being a fact.
Good job, so. But it's true. Yes, so it is not true that this is an in-joke about Robert Picardo accidentally killing 5 crew members and a sickly child. It just happens to be a coincidence.
One of them bald.
Okay.
It's just a coincidence.
It's
just a coincidence that there's this similar thing.
It happened, but they weren't related.
Technically, it wasn't an in-joke.
Yeah.
Just a coincidence.
Just a coincidence.
But yeah, there was a fire that damaged the bridge of the Voyager, and so they, what it wasn't clear, I tried to do some research, it wasn't clear if they decided just put this episode here for that reason, or if they were already doing a Captain Proton Chaotica episode and they expanded the idea a little bit. I'm not entirely sure about that. I'm sure one of our intrepid listeners, the listeners who listen on the USS Intrepid, can write in and let us know. And the other thing was that, yeah, that throne that Chaotica used has been repurposed. Has been a prop in a fair number of things, but the most prominent seemed to be the Voyager episode Distant Origins and the 1993 Dan Aykroyd, Jane Curtin movie, Coneheads.
Right on.
Which is the origin of the Red Hot Chili Peppers song, Soul to Squeeze. And it came from that movie.
Jason Alexander's in it, as I recall. Mm. It's actually a pretty good movie.
Apparently,
I don't think it's a terrible movie.
No, Conehead movie is fine. Yeah,
they used that song, Soul to Squeeze, but is that song like an outtake from a previous...
No, I think that was his first recording.
Did they make that for that?
The music video itself has scenes from Coneheads.
I
think it does, doesn't it?
But that's just the video. You can make a video.
I'm pretty sure that. I'm pretty sure that
fans are making music.
I'm pretty sure it wasn't an EP before. I don't think it was, or not EP, single. I don't think it was a single before.
Well, I mean, I'm just saying it could have been something they didn't use.
Oh, something they didn't use. I don't know why that song would have ended up on the cutting room floor, because exactly, it ended up being like one of their most popular songs.
True, yeah.
But that is interesting. I guess I don't know for a fact in that sense.
I mean, I'm not trying to challenge your ass or anything. I'm just saying.
Challenge your ass.
I'm just saying, you know.
All right. So
it says, well, but everything I've looked at says it's from the Coneheads soundtrack. But yeah, that doesn't mean that wasn't something that they
picked. It might be.
Up.
It wouldn't surprise me. Queen did the whole movie for the fucking, you know.
Because wasn't that when they were sort of between guitar players and stuff?
This was 1993.
Yeah, that's such a long time ago.
Yeah, it was. I guess they weren't.
I guess they weren't really. It wasn't 93, really.
Yeah, it was on 93, I think.
Yeah, maybe it was.
I think.
Yeah, I think that sounds right.
And then I think Blood Sugar Sex Magik came out before that, so maybe you're right.
Fascinating. Okay,
yeah. So this is a different.
That'll do it for this week.
But you're saying Queen did it for what? Queen did it for what?
For the Flash Gordon movie, right?
Okay, and then Prince did it for the Batman. 1989 Batman had two soundtracks. Yeah. One with Danny Elfman, one with Prince.
Right.
Yeah, it happens from time to time.
Yeah, it happens.
And then you had Armageddon with Aerosmith. Don't want to lose my.
That was one song though, not a whole album.
Yeah, but what's the difference?
I don't know.
So yes, that's the It's Got Star Trek podcast for this week. Next week we are going to be discussing our man Bashir. Why not? Why the fuck not? We're going to go ahead and it's another hologram adventure.
What are you going to do about it?
And characters have to play as characters, but they do it in a different way.
So this wormhole segment is like an extra, like sort of like potpourri of different fun things.
Yeah,
basically.
We're trying to figure it out. Just, you know, toss things up in the air and shoot them with a shotgun and see what we
shit them.
No, that's what a bullion does. Shoot him with a shotgun.
Shit's like a shotgun.
You throw it up in the air.
Bullion shit like a shotgun.
And if you shoot it, then you win or something. I don't know.
But then it's broken and destroyed, so you can't use it.
Yeah, but this is America. That's how we do
things.
That's
how you win.
That's how we celebrate things. We destroy them.
Yeah.
We build them up and then destroy them. All right. But yeah, our man Bashir.
Like democracy.
Deep Space Nine, season 4, episode 10. So just toss that up on your streaming machines or whatever else you got out there. So we'll be discussing that next week.
Streaming machines.
And then after that, we're going to be moving into our coverage of season 4 of Discovery. So all sorts of fun stuff coming up.
So twiddle your nibblies about that.
Twiddle your nibblies. We already gave you, you know,
keep them sharply
feedback
twiddled.
At itsgotstartrek.com and it's got Star Trek on all the social medias and the YouTubes. You got all this business and the Apple Podcasts.
You're
your
already
friends,
listening.
And rate and review. And
YouTube. Don't forget YouTube.
And I think I said YouTube.
And Apple Podcasts.
And Apple Podcasts. And what you got to do is you got to write us on one of those other things. If you want Dan to do a TikTok, start a TikTok account. You got to write in.
Wait, when did this?
And be like, we want Dan to do daily TikTok Star Trek facts.
Well, I guess I could just do them all in one day.
And then schedule
them
ahead.
That's cheating.
Of time.
If the internet caught me doing that, they would never let me.
All right. So when you write in and tell us whether or not you want Dan to do the TikToks, also in a separate clause, indicate whether or not you would insist he do them on the day of
at a specific time.
Or if he could do them in batches ahead of time.
Lord knows I like to batch.
That would be helpful. All right. So until next week, until our man Bashir, have the loveliest of times doing whatever it is you people do these days. I don't know.
Really non-committal.
I don't
fucking
non-committing to inspirationalism.
Yeah. Whatever floats your boat. That's the message of the day. All right. Well, have a good one.
Unless your boat floats on dead bodies.
Bye-bye. See you next week.
I don't know how to tell you this, but the wedding's off.